what's on your mind. She's getting real, not afraid to feel. Take her soul to soul, just let it flow. No one can do it quite like Caroline. It's time for Caroline.
So I'm really excited. I have Haley Young joining me. And this is really fun because, Haley, we have known each other for decades, right? Like with an S on the end, like decades.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's been since 2006, maybe.
It's kind of awesome when you have like OG friends like this, because we always ran around in like the same kind of like scene forever, like going out to like, I feel like for a while it was like Mafiosos, like every Tuesday night. And then it was like Tin Roof. And then Cadillac 3 was a huge band, but they were like Bang Bang Bang. And then your husband, Ricky Young, who's in the Wild Feathers now, is like, he was always playing shows. And my husband, Michael, and his band, A Thousand Horses, like there's this whole, it was kind of like this rocker scene that was happening, right?
Oh, absolutely. And we were there, front row.
And I just like, because I had fallen in love with Michael, and he was 21 and I was 24. And like, are you older than Ricky?
Or is he older than you? He's just a year older. So, the funny story about Michael is he used to call me Mama. And I'm sorry, I'm not like that much older than him.
No, I think I'm older than you. I think I'm older than you, Haley. I just turned 38.
Yeah, I'm 37. So yeah. I was like, Michael, but I guess it's because I was dating Ricky. And when I met Michael, because they had just moved into town, and my other good friend was dating one of his best friends. So I think when we just met, I don't know if we just were, he thought we were so much older, probably because I have lost a little bit of my Southern twang. And so I think I was always trying to like herd the people and make sure that they're okay. And so he just thought I was just like, he always called me, oh, there's Mama.
And also you're like probably one of the only responsible ones in the crew who has a real job. You're a nurse. Let's talk about that. Where all these like just wild hellion musicians. I mean, just how did you deal with that? Like, they're just out of control. They're so fun and it's so much fun, but like they were just could not be tamed. And I think that's what was alluring about it.
Oh, absolutely. It was a complete opposite of what I was dealing with in such a structured environment. And yeah, there was many nights that I was out and then would have to go into work, you know, at 6:30 a.m. and be there for 12-hour shifts. And I was also working night shift a lot too. So that kind of worked out when I first got out of nursing, because I was a night owl. Well, all of our friends were night owls because they were playing shows and staying out and drinking and hanging. And so it was perfect. So I could fit right in, but it sucked on the nights that I did work because I just had to miss out on all the fun you guys were having when I wanted to be there. And I had to work a lot. You know?
What is it like having a structured job, like saving lives, dating a musician who has opposite day of structure?
Yeah, that is something, well, like I said, I think it's just the complete opposite. And that's so enticing because let's be honest, in a hospital, I'm not dealing with like happy people. I'm seeing people at their worst. So it's nice to completely go into a different aspect, environment, culture, and just take yourself completely away from that, because it's exhausting. And I don't think I realized when I first started, I was young, you know, I was working in the ER at 21. So
you were in the ER at 21, Haley?
Yeah, I got out of nursing school and went directly into the emergency room. And worked night shift, and then got, you know, you move your way up to day shift. But it was great because it's so intense. And that's the perfect age to go into the ER. I will say that. I think it's the perfect age, because now, if I had to be in the ER now, then I think back, because I worked with moms and, you know, or women that were having kids at that time. And how they did that, I literally wish I could go back to every single one of them and just give them the biggest hug and be like, if I was ever a jerk or, you know, complete, like just didn't realize how hard this job is plus being a mom, please let me bow down to you now, because I'm not there and it's hard. But yeah, at that age, you're young. You love the adrenaline. You love being pushed. You know, you can go on coffee and a donut and for 12 hours and you're all right. So, and I learned so much there. I mean, you see everything. I tell people you see everything from the womb to the tomb.
Womb to the tomb. How do you process that? Because like you must have to, do you have to have a certain personality to be a nurse in the ER? Because I feel like I am just a constant emotional wreck all the time. And I internalize everything I see and I cannot shake it. I can't get over it. Like, how do you handle that? And how do you like block things in your life so you can like not carry things around with you and like let it, you know, seep into your life that you're building, you know, so you can enjoy it? Because I feel like some things are hard to see that you can't ever unsee.
Absolutely. I mean, I think another, you know, another thing back, I say back then, that sounds so
but I'm like, we're old, and I'm 40.
Not.
We're almost 40, so it is back then. I'm like, how is this possible?
Yeah, but it did. I don't think I really realized how much it did affect me. You totally compartmentalize. There's not a nurse out there that doesn't compartmentalize because you see so many things. And you see so many horrible things that you literally have to, because especially in the ER, it is a revolving door. It does not stop. So you just pronounce somebody
worst,
and put them in
the body. You're saying the most emergency situations that are happening and it is like seconds matter.
Absolutely. So you're doing that and you've got that person, sounds more like you put them in a body bag, but then you've got three other patients that you've got to take care of. And one of them may be, you know, a three-year-old kid that's, you know, their mom's worried. It's 3 a.m. They're here because their child's had a fever all day. It's Sunday. She's got to go to work tomorrow. She's stressed. She doesn't know what else to do. Nothing's open. She's tried to like put up with it all weekend long. And so here she is and you're walking there trying to be this happy face at 3 a.m. for this mom who's, you know, just totally lost. She's just like, please just help me. They've probably been waiting for 3 hours because it's the ER. So yeah, there's a lot of things that you have to compartmentalize to just move through and navigate. And I think the good thing of where we are getting, hopefully, with mental health and awareness is I believe that they're putting more priority, I really hope so, into debriefing situations where they will bring you in and they'll bring in such a counselor to talk about when there are those very traumatic situations. Because there's things that happen that you can't even, you really can't even make up or hypothesize. So yeah, they're trying to do that more. And I think big universities do a lot more of that with debriefing with their staff so that you can talk about it and kind of relive that and have more and have coping skills because you definitely need it. But I don't think I really, I just stuffed.
And what happens when you stuff? Because like,
that's not good.
Does it like, how does it come out eventually?
Right. So I would say in my 20s, I was definitely a little more wild. I went through some things, you know, I lost my father at a young age. And I think I just stuffed myself in work because also in the hospital, you can work overtime. You can get all the hours you want. So you kind of just go into like this, I'm just going to work more and stuff it. And then just, you just become numb. So usually, let me just speak on the behalf of all ER nurses, ICU nurses. You go in and they look like they're just numb. It's because they are. And it's not because they don't care about you. They do. And they know exactly what to do. And they know sick and not sick. And as much as you feel like that toenail that, you know, you stepped on a nail and it still hurt and you 2 days later is the worst ever and you need to get back there now. I promise you though, these nurses are, they're so, they see it all day long. So, you know, so you go through a lot and you start to learn that, okay, I do need to start figuring these things out. And so that's, you know, therapy is a wonderful thing. And it has been such a turning point for me. I think after losing my dad, I realized, you know, I got on medicine for a little bit to help that. And that helped me get out of just the fact of just feeling suppressive. Like I wasn't comfortable with those emotions because it was so much emotion. Plus I think working in the ER, seeing all those things, like the moment you finally do break through that, then it was just like, I couldn't stop crying. So I got on medicine for a little while. And then once I felt good and comfortable, I was able to come off of that and start therapy. And that's the turning point. That's
the
literally what you need.
The turning point for you?
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, I feel like a lot of people are scared to do therapy because I've gone to therapy a lot. And when I first started going, my therapist was like, people are afraid to come to therapy because they would actually rather die a lot of the times than like look at what is in their mind that's plaguing them. And I get that. It's all sorts of stuff that like keeps you down, and you'd rather just keep moving and stuffing and avoiding because you're like, I do not want to deal with this. This is painful. And once I crack this open, oh my God, where are we going to go? You know,
it's a lot of work.
It takes a lot of work.
Oh, it's so much work.
But I want to ask you though, as someone who's done it, getting to the other side, and obviously we always have to work on ourselves, like making that breakthrough.
Yes.
Like how long did that take you, and why would you recommend sticking it out for someone who is listening, who is like so afraid to take that plunge, but knows that they need it?
Yeah. Oh, I think it's hard to open up and feel comfortable because it can take a couple therapists maybe to feel that comfortable. And when you're not comfortable talking about those emotions and you don't want to relive them, you just want the person to, or you guys to just connect and it be it. But I realized quickly that that maybe wasn't the thing. Not that therapist was bad. It just wasn't what was working with me. It wasn't a match. And so you just have to keep trying. And I think for me, it's like someone, like mental health, we need to think about as someone with gets a diagnosis of a diabetic, that's a type 2 diabetic, and they have to be on insulin. Like it's something you live with every single day. And so when you've had things happen and you're aware of it and you want to make a change, then that's something you have to work out every single day because it's not going to go anywhere. And I really don't like to put people in a box of, some people love to be labeled of, I have depression, I have anxiety, I have this, I have that. And if that works for you and you're comfortable with that, that's wonderful. For me, I hate labels. I just want to work through things and get better coping. That's like even with my health. Like I love alternative therapies. Because I'm always that person that wants to know the reason why. Give me the deeper layer. Well, why is this happening? That's why I went into medicine. That's why I went into my profession. It's because I was always wanting the question why, instead of just like, okay, sure, give me that. I was never okay with that. So for me, getting to the other side of that was so hard to connect. Like I said, I think it took me 3 therapists to get to finally where I felt, oh, I'm connecting. And a lot of hours with grief training.
What is grief training?
Grief therapy, I guess I should say, because I didn't realize, because I feel like our generation, like our parents, they didn't have this much awareness. You know, they didn't talk about this.
Absolutely.
So they didn't get to tell us like, hey, this is what you're going through, and I want you to know this is normal, and this may help you to do this.
Because they were more like, I don't want to deal with it either. Probably because like that it's, you're right. The resources and tools weren't as available, and it wasn't as like accepted to talk about these things.
Absolutely. It was very taboo. Like, oh, if you have that, then, you know, and especially for women, I think,
supposed to like have it all together. Like a mom just has to have everything together and everything's fine.
Oh, it's so fine.
But
and
it's
you
not.
Know, don't
it's
be
fine.
Emotional. Yeah. Or if we're too emotional, so you can't be emotional. And you know, when actually that's our superpower. So yeah, I think for anyone that's struggling, just know you have to stick with it, and it's going to take more than a couple of sessions, and it's hard. But then when you get to the other side and you feel, it's more about them. You can talk to your friends and you can read all the books you want to read. It is about being that one-on-one with that person that can look at you specifically and give you the tools that work for your personality. You know, for me, it was, you know, I like structure, and I have always grown up with a competitive nature and kind of exercise. And that's my therapy. Like that's something that works really well with my body and my mind is exercise. And that's something I have to have almost as a daily functioning for me, just as if someone had to take insulin. It's not so much as, it just really helps with my endorphins and serotonin. So it's knowing that, and or knowing how to say, hey, when you feel this way, this is why. And then you may even need deeper therapies that are trained professionals that take you through, kind of like my grief. When I went to that was a wonderful breakthrough. They did a lot of different scenarios that helped talk me through the places I was having a really hard time navigating on my own. But I had no idea, Carolyn. I had no idea that that was what was going on. So like anyone I just say
blocking you.
Yeah, that was just blocking me, and then it creates anger and resentment, and you can't be happy, and or it's just sadness too that I didn't realize. I thought I was fine. I was like, I mean, I'm sad. It's happened, but I didn't realize that sadness.
Had, your dad had passed.
Yeah, that when my dad passed, I was young. I was 25, so
you were 25. And it was my brother.
Yeah, so it was like right during the time of just like you're just really deep in your first career and feeling like an adult and independent and on your own. And then that kind of hits you. And I was very close with my dad. We were best friends. So, and it's funny, my dad was a musician, a singer songwriter. So here's the funny story to this.
Tell me a little bit about your dad and y'all's relationship.
Yeah. Yeah. It's great. So he's, I'm so much like my dad. So I have an older brother and he's still like, him and my mom are best friends, but me and my dad, we were the ones that connected. It was just that, you know, father-daughter, best bud thing. So I'm sure Michael feels that with little Sonny. So I love it. But anyway, so he was a singer-songwriter, but when he had his family, he started his family, of course, he had to get a real job and provide. So that's when we moved. Well, he started working for a factory, which is a GM, General Motors. And he was part of the union and, you know, really worked himself up into more of a leader role, administrative role. And then we moved down here with the Spring Hill plant when they opened Saturn. So that's what brought me to Tennessee.
Okay, so your dad's job.
Was my dad's job. And so we moved down to Linville, Tennessee, this little tiny, tiny country town. It was so precious. It is still so precious. But we had a little farm with horses. And so I just lived the life, the dream life as a kid on that farm. I literally can't believe the life I lived. I mean,
what did you
it's
do
not that we had like a ton of money, but we had horses. I rode horses every single day. Like, you know, it was like, I rode horses. I went to this small little public school. It was a K-12 school, graduated with 98 people.
Did you love growing up in a small town?
I didn't know any different. So for me, of course, I always thought it was so funny because I would get friends outside of my little small country school and I would look at them and be like, oh, they're so cool. And like, they live in Columbia.
And that's still small town.
It's still so small. And Nashville, I used to go up to Nashville to Lipscomb University in the summertime to their basketball camps because I played basketball. And I just remember thinking Nashville was like, it was huge. These girls were so much more mature. They were just more like clicky. And here I was like, hey, y'all, like, are y'all just friends?
Linville. What do you think those core values are that you learned being from such a small town? And then there's something to tell about your dad that I totally segued. So you've got to work your way back to it.
I do have to work my way back to it. But like growing up in a small town, it's very humbling. I feel like you just lose any sense of entitlement. You know, I feel.
Why is that?
The ego. I just feel like there's not a lot of levels of socioeconomics there. You know, like in the big town, you see maybe this lower income, middle class and higher. You don't see that there. We are all the same as it should be.
That's awesome.
And so like for me, I didn't recognize any of that. You know, we had, you know, my best friend, they had nothing. But I loved being with them and we, you know, at their place, and I didn't know any different then. But now looking back and I'm like, wow, they probably really struggled then as I've been older, but we had so much fun. I loved being at her house and we just had a great time and whatever, you know, but here you definitely see that. So I feel like growing in a small town, I don't know. It was humbling, but yeah, I didn't know it was humbling. I was friends with everyone. Everyone helped everyone out. It was
definitely different childhood.
It really was. Like now that I'm older and look back on it, and I say it all the time, people wouldn't realize or even believe some of the stories that I have of like me waking up at 6 a.m. and going and sat on my horse and riding with my neighbor, literally just on our land, and we had this little creek that we would go down to, and we called it Fern Gully, and we would be there all day long. And like, we didn't have cell phones. I didn't have a pager. I didn't have anything. And I was on a huge horse. Like,
and your parents just let you go? How old were
they
you?
Just let me know. I mean, they just trusted that I knew what I was doing. It's crazy.
How old were you when you were doing this?
So I was probably, that's what I was saying to my brother, I think I was like probably 9, 10.
Did you just saddle on a horse and go ride?
Oh, absolutely. Oh yeah. I was.
That's amazing, Haley.
I know. It's crazy. But anyways, but my dad taught me all that. He also grew up with horses. And so that's what he wanted. That was his dream, is he wanted to move to Nashville or somewhere near Nashville, play music, have horses. So that was his dream.
Was he country music? Is that what he played?
Yes, he did. Okay. But he's country. But he also had the roots of like the Eagles and
You didn't. The apple didn't fall far from the tree with old Ricky Young there.
I'm telling you, it's crazy, Caroline. Like, it's ridiculous. I mean, and oh my God, it's so funny. But yes, so my dad came down here to play music, but he ended up working, having a really great job. He would play on the weekends with his buddies, but it never led into anything. But so I was always around music. So when I got out of college and I was going to Nashville, because I went to college in Lebanon, Tennessee, which is about 30 minutes east of Nashville. And, we would come to Nashville to hang out. And of course you go and watch shows. And so that's when I got into this whole music scene. And then that's how I met Ricky, my husband, now husband, going to another show. But it's funny because my dad's name is Ricky. I know. And so I remember calling my mom after I met Ricky the first time. I was like, Mom, I was like, you're never going to believe this. And she's like, what? What have you gotten into now? And I was like, well, I met this guy. He's great. He's super fun. His name is Ricky. She's like, what? And she's like, and he plays music, and he's a lead singer.
It's country with an Eagles tone and a little rock and roll.
And she was like, run, sissy, run.
Did your parents stay married, or had they divorced?
Yes, they were married. They stayed married, yep. And my dad actually got to see Ricky play a couple times.
So he met Ricky?
He got to meet Ricky.
And did they hit it off?
He was super impressed. And, like, Ricky loves to tell the story about coming down to my house, and like my dad, of course, had a million guitars, because as a musician, that's what you do, is you just
collect guitars.
That's just a hobby. And so my dad had never really, I'd never dated any guy that played music or cared anything about it. So when Ricky came home and he knew that he played, he was like taking out all of his guitars, of course, and going through all the stories of this and that. And it was just a really sweet memory that Ricky like really cherishes, because he got to experience that and hear all the stories behind the guitars, as you know. So,
and that means so much to you, I'm sure, that your dad had this chance to really connect with Ricky and such a level.
It's the best. I mean, you know, that's what you want, is you want that relationship between your husband and your father, you know, but the fact that I just feel like that was just a God thing and a God wink of just like, I'm going to give you this, and this is going to be something that will nurture your heart, you know, that you'll be able to take, because he got to express that. And that was, I just remember my dad lighting up, like having my dad sit there and talk about that and seeing him light up about it and laugh. And that felt good, as you know, bringing this guy that you're just like infatuated with, and that your dad feels that same type of love and connection. It was special. So,
and I have to say, Ricky, he's still like the coolest, but like in our days when none of us were married and we were running wild in Nashville and in this little music scene, Ricky was so cool. I mean, like, and he's just got swag, you know? I mean, he's so cool, and his voice is so great. He was always one of those like undercover, like hot artists in Nashville, you know, because there's this whole scene of people who hadn't really gotten signed yet or really gotten discovered, but they were like, everyone in the scene knew, like, oh, this guy, this girl, you know, whatever, can sing. Ricky was always that guy, just like swag and cool. And
he's going to love he's going to be like, okay. Yes.
I mean, did you not think so? Because I remember you're cracking me up with your Insta stories now. You did this TikTok the other day. It's like, it was like, your man, he leave his, like, I don't even know what it was. What did the TikTok say?
It was one that I had gotten off of it was off of Drake White's, but then he got erased. And so I was like, I spent so much time on that TikTok, but it was about talking about like, look at your man. That one was like, look at, is this one, look at the screen. And he's like doing this weird dance. And then I was like, that's mine.
That's
I'm
mine.
But I'm going to stay with him. I'm gonna stick by his side. I'm gonna stay with him.
That was so funny. Cause now I haven't married.
No, he is so cool. That's what, I mean, like that was, I didn't know the first time I met him that he was a musician. I knew his name was Ricky and he was super just like fun and, you know, quick like that. He had that same, like he was very charismatic, personable, funny. I didn't learn until a couple dates later that he played music and I was like, oh God, because I always thought he was hot already. And then that on top of it, are you kidding me? Like, oh, heartthrob.
And then he's so good.
And then you hear him play and I was like, oh, he's going to suck. And then I was like, oh my God.
Don't you think that you have to love your husband's music or else you couldn't really be happily married?
Oh yeah, no. I wouldn't. Here's the thing. I wouldn't be able to like put up with what you have to put up. I'd be like, honey, I love you, but like
you actually are terrible. I can't. Like all these things. Like you want me to get on board with all this work and sacrifice that you're gonna have to do and this broken heart dream that you're living, but like that's gonna like be wonderful. You're gonna have these high highs and these like really low lows, and we're all gonna be on this roller coaster together. It's gonna be wild. But actually, I can't do this with you because your music is terrible.
Yeah, oh,
I you can't. You can't feel that way. It. You can't. You're right. No, you can't do it.
No, we wouldn't be doing that. I'd be like, okay, I love you, but it's time to let's go in another direction here. We're gonna.
We've always known that Ricky had something.
Oh man, yeah, he's. I mean, like you know, it's when you see talent like that, and I know, of course, I
agree with you.
And it's just the way he could write. You know, he's such a great writer too, but his voice is just, it's perfection. And it's just gotten better. I feel like every year it's crazy. You know, even coming out of COVID, I really thought that was hard, you know, and the pandemic and shutting down everything. It's still hard on our musicians and just their livelihood. And, you know, it's been such a struggle with everything for them to stay positive and to stay, you know, because everything crumbled, literally everything.
Musicians were off the road for like a year and a half. They're just now back.
I mean, just a lot of things went bad. And so for them to come out and him still just have that fire and, you know, that's something that I really, it's just, it's for me, I was like, that's amazing. So that, you know, that's a passion when you can come out of that and still have that fire to start all over and start. They're kind of starting from the, just feeling like the beginnings when they've been doing this now for almost, I don't know, 7-10 years or something. But yeah, he's great. What he does is great. He's great at what he does. And
how do you stay passionate about it as a wife? Because I feel like that's the other side, because like, you know, like you can know you have the greatest husband in the world, but like sometimes you just like, it's just like too much. It's like, I just like, you know, it's like, how do you handle it?
It's so hard. It only gets harder once you become a mom.
Yeah.
And you have to do this on your own. Cause before it was like, yeah, go, you know what? Give me some time. You go have your time.
Yes.
I'm going to do me. I have a great community of girlfriends and we love to be social. I live in Nashville. I'm not bored on things to do. But when you become a mom and then they go on the road, so that's another, for me, like COVID sucks. It's the worst and it has tormented so many people. But for me, we had a lot of bright sides of him being home during some really tough years. I feel like with a toddler, he got to be home and help. And although that took a whole other level of us transitioning and learning our roles in the home,
how did you do that?
That's a lot of therapy.
Would he go to therapy with you?
Oh yes, we go to couples therapy.
Okay, so Michael and I just started going to couples therapy. I mean, I don't know that I've announced this to everyone, but I'm like, it is like really important to do this as a couple, just to like tune up. I mean, you tune up everything else. Why would you not tune up your relationship just to check in with a professional?
Oh, absolutely.
Especially and so much has happened in everyone's life. Like, I don't even know if you even started unpacking like the death of your dad there, because Michael's dad passed away. And like, it's like, sometimes like you said, you stuff, and it's like, you just got to like get to a place where you can say, how is all this affecting everything?
Absolutely. And you don't know, as the person who holds that grief, you want to say that it's fine. And like, no, you don't want that to ever be the reason that's making maybe your personality be not easy to get along with. Also, when that's what you have to look at, because that's hard. And it never gets easier. It doesn't get easier because that person was so prominent in your life. But it gets softer on how you translate that in your relationships. And that's where couples therapy really brought that around. Because Ricky didn't want to make me sad or bring up this thing that could be emotional. So, but I think also letting me know that sometimes I need him to ask me those questions, or sometimes I need him to maybe let me maybe entice that conversation a little bit more so I can be soft. And that's where there's couples therapy for that, because he just didn't want to bother me. He wanted to be like, okay, she's tough, she's stoic. Like, I'm one person that's like, just let me get it done. Let me do things, very much in control. And so when something like that, he just doesn't want me to feel out of control, because then I could become more. So couples therapy helped that, for him to learn skills and for me to feel comfortable talking to him about that. Because there's also a place where I don't want to make him sad if he's having a good day. Maybe something touched me wrong that brought up these huge, deep memories. And I don't want to be like, oh, I'm so sad. But it's like, you can talk about it, and it doesn't have to like bring your whole day back. It doesn't have to set you back. You know, it's like one of those things that.
Now that's, you know, a breakthrough. Really. That's a breakthrough. When you can get to the point where you can talk about something so painful and that has caused so much grief, but it doesn't have to ruin your day.
No. And you can just be like, yeah, that was tough, but like, I'm looking at that and, you know, it's fine. It's kind of like a stream. There's going to be little hiccups in the stream. There's going to be places where it's really clear and shiny and the sun shines off of it and it's beautiful when you look back on those memories. And there's those ones that kind of give you a hiccup, but guess what? It still moves. So you just kind of move with it and just know that, okay, I can be in that, but it doesn't have to take my whole day. Whereas before therapy and understanding these coping skills, I might have gotten stuck in that and thought, oh, I've got to be sad all day long because, I mean, it's... You know what I mean? Like, it's my dad. Like, of course.
That's so true. Like, you think I have to be sad because that huge feeling hit you. It's right. Real. And right. Like, how can you allow yourself to let go of that feeling? And it's like you obsess about it because it's huge.
Yeah. Oh, it's huge.
How do you let yourself know I can let go of this massive feeling that feels sad because I feel like I don't deserve to have any other feelings because this one's so overwhelming, you know?
Right. That's a good way to put it is, I don't deserve, like, but you do. I think we get in that, we get all this guilt of like, if I'd be happy that I'm not mourning or I'm not giving that it's justice, but that is where that's wrong. You know, you just have to say, no, this was this and this hurts for a moment, but I have so many beautiful memories and I have so much good to take away from this. And I'm going to go enjoy my day with my husband and we're going to go have fun and we're going to do silly things. And I'm going to maybe tell him about it, be like, "Ooh, and that's one thing I've gotten better is maybe something like, I had a moment this morning, like that touched me really weird. I had a moment, but I'm moving past it and I'm ready for us to be on our day. And he's like, okay. He's like, do you want to talk about it anymore? And I'm like, no, I'm good. I just want you to know that like that was touchy but I'm good. Like, let's just go and let's do this now.
Then you can express it and then you can move on for the day.
And then you move on. I think allowing yourself, like saying, I don't have to feel this guilt. It's okay for me to enjoy my life. It's okay to go on. It's okay that this was a hard day. And some days are harder than others, but it's just, you know, knowing that, giving it its moment, crying a little bit, and then being like, all right, let's move on. I've got a life to live, and that's what I'm here for, and that's what God has me here for, is to live life and to have it fulfilled and to be happy and to be joyful and to have the things I want. And I'm not saying that's easy to do, and I'm not saying every time I'm like, oh, yeah, let's go parade around town. There's some days it just doesn't. I can't shake it, and it's a bad day. But a lot of the help has come from just understanding how to cope with those feelings and understanding it. We don't know how to understand it if you've not grown up with a therapist or a psychologist or a psychiatrist as your family member. I'm going to guarantee you that our generation didn't grow up with someone that was welcoming to all these feelings. So, and it's not our parents' fault. That's one thing I tell my mom all the time. She's like, I wish I wouldn't. I was like, you had no idea. I was like, I'm barely making it and I have everything at the fingertips of my phone. So are you kidding me? Like, you did an amazing job.
Yes.
And I just think, but that's where we know we have those tools and we can use them. And it doesn't mean that you're weak. And it doesn't mean that you don't have it together. It's just, how can I cope better for me and my spouse? And you have to want it too. You have to want that. And I was at a place I wanted that. I was aware that it was affecting me and affecting my relationships, and I wanted to be better.
that's so cool about Nashville and the country music industry too. It's like so many people in Nashville want to better themselves, and so many friends love to be involved with therapy, and their spouses do too, and they make it a cool thing, and people aren't scared to talk about it, and it's becoming like honestly, I feel it's becoming like the thing you want. Like it's something to aspire to be like, okay, I want to work on my mental health. It's not shameful. It's nothing to make you feel like you were saying earlier, weak or less than. It's like, okay, this is actually going to benefit me tremendously to give me these tools to cope. And we all need them. Like we all need them. No matter how many, like you said, no matter how many self-help books or like, how many friends you can talk to, like just to have someone that you can connect with who has tools to give you. And maybe you can get them in self-help books. I mean, you can. But I think there is something so important about checking in with therapy every now and then, at least.
I'm happy to hear that. As a medical professional, you know, I want that. I feel like I get so in my box that I hope that that's what people are doing. And I also get that same feeling, and that our culture is very open to that. And there's so many affordable things for that now. Like, I think that's the beautiful thing about it is we have learned that people didn't want to do it. They just couldn't afford it. And so now there's so many tools, especially for musicians now, to really help. And I think that's the one thing great about Nashville is that they have put a lot of time and effort into making this more available. Because it's needed. Our life, the musician lifestyle, as glamorous and as beautiful as it looks to the outstanding people, it's really hard. And there's a lot, not that other people's lives aren't hard too. You know, that's one thing I get into a lot about it. And I think with us, because I work a very structured, a very healthcare, it's very black and white. There's no pats on the back. And I have a husband who literally his job, he works, you know, for an hour and people love to come talk to him afterwards and pet. And it's this constant, great. Yeah. Like you did awesome. And all these beautiful just accolades to him. And I'm just like, wow, I wish I got that after a 12-hour shift and what I just did.
I'm actually saving lives and like dealing with trauma and really hard stuff. And
no, you but
dogs.
Right. You know, y'all, what's going on? But I mean, that's the choice. And those are our passions. But, you know, I think but they have their struggles too. And it's unreal. And just the level of what they have to go through and turning that on and being that person. And I've learned a lot in therapy just by that. And because I just was an outstander and person that had this job that I didn't understand how difficult that was for him sometimes in that transition and just how that can be really hard too. And I have to give that what it is and not try to like downgrade or minimize it because it's so easy because it's hard, you know, to then come into a family life and his passion was ripped out from underneath him. That's the craziest thing ever. He would have thought that concerts would go away but here we are. Thankfully it's going back, but you know, his passion, he couldn't do it. He couldn't feel what made him feel alive. Whereas when I go in and treat and diagnose, that I feel good. That makes me feel good. I've given you a plan. I've diagnosed you. We're getting to something. So yeah, I can, and that's what keeps us great too and healthy. So musicians need it just as much as we do. They're not on this pedestal and you know, life doesn't touch them. It's hard to.
Some people think, oh, a musician's life or an artist or an entertainer's life or someone in a spotlight, they just have it made. Like it's so easy, but sometimes like the stress and the pressure is like overwhelming.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And just how much it can be, that also can be just taken out from under you, not in no time too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's been crazy. But you know, other than that, it's been good. But that's helped us. Therapy, I can't speak enough about it. That's helped us as a couple. It's helped us individually. And I am such a huge advocate for anyone struggling with anything to just find that avenue, do the work, research it, get in however you can. And I guarantee if you stick with it, it's not going to change overnight. It's not like taking an ibuprofen for a headache. You know, it's going to take some work, but you're going to be so happy you did it.
So what would you say is your secret to marriage with Ricky and going through all of these life changes that you've gone through? Like y'all met when you're super young, mm-hmm. He's dealt with the loss of your father, like you, him a musician, you with your intense job and as an ER nurse and a nurse and now having a child together, him being on the road. Like that's a lot coming at you and your marriage, you know?
Yeah. And I went back to school and got my master's. And so now I'm a nurse practitioner.
Oh my
and
gosh.
That's a whole other level of just like, it was great. It was another level of where I wanted to reach on education, but it's another level of stress that.
Do you deliver babies ever?
No. Okay. I actually did that as an ER nurse, it was not planned, but those that come in and they're just like, I'm about to deliver. And you're like, yes, you are.
Oh my gosh. So you just have to deliver a baby and you're totally not prepared.
No, well, of course you're prepared. You're in the ER. So you have ancillary staff and plenty of people, but so I'm telling you, it's from the womb to the tomb. I'm doing it all in the ER. It's the most fascinating job ever. I loved it.
You sure had a book about being an ER nurse.
I'm sure there's plenty out there. I mean, if you ever need some good stories or a good person to party with, go out and ER nurse because they're ready to go.
They need to let down.
Yeah, they're ready to let it go and just get out of the town and forget everything. So, I don't know. What was your question? Oh, how did the secret? I don't know. We have a secret. We have a lot of trial and just trial and error. A lot of grace, a lot of, him listening to me complain right now. I feel like,
hey, there's season.
You know, like I said, that whole motherhood and that transition and then me working full time. And now him gearing back on the road, like I just got so accustomed to his help here. And I would listen to him on these interviews he would do during COVID. And he's like, yeah, I know my wife is ready for me to get back on the road. And I would be like,
I'm not at all.
Stop saying that. I was like, you're here to help me. These tantrums are intense with this 3-year-old. Like, oh my gosh, the potty training and me working full time. I am so happy to have you home.
What did you do? Like, what do you do when he's not home to do dad? Oh, you have her in school. Like she's in school. She goes,
she's in school. So she's in school from 8 to 3:30. And then I get her, my job, I'm able to go and get her. I still have to come home and do some charting, but, I'm able to get her. They're flexible with me because I work Monday through Friday too. And then some on the weekends. Crazy. But, yeah. So when we get home, it's just, I'm exhausted and she's usually exhausted, but we just kind of get in our little routine. You know, we get in a routine, we have our dinner, we do our bath, we do our bedtime routine that takes forever now.
Now she does not want to go to sleep.
Yeah, now she doesn't want to sleep. And they wake up in the middle of the night too at 4. Some don't. If you have one of those children, you know, I sleep trained my child at a young age and thought I'm going to have this kid that just goes right to bed at 7 and sleeps through the night and then wakes up at 7. Well, that all changed. So, when she was an infant, it was great. It was just like, yeah.
Oh, God, so they go back. Do you ever struggle with mom guilt, like being a working mom? Because I know a lot of moms feel that way. It's like.
All the time. All the time.
Daughter to like follow her dreams and do her passion and work and do all that. But then it's like when you have a kid, all of a sudden the mom guilt is real, right?
Oh, absolutely. You've got a job and you have to do it. And that's what you worked really hard for in your career. But so you have this whole, like, I did this. This is my passion. She's going to see me doing my passion. And I really try to make our time together just the best it can be. You know, like I try to like take her to fun places and just when I'm here, we're present and we're together. She's having a hard time. She wants me now, but yeah, it's hard. I have a lot of mom guilt, but I have to work through that because there's no place for that. You don't have time for that. You don't have time, and that would drain me and make me more. I think it just build more resentment in my marriage and in my job, and I can't do that. So
is Ricky and Dylan here?
Yeah, they're here.
Have Ricky come on, because I want to ask Ricky a question about you.
Come here. You know, she's,
okay, we're about to wrap up anyway, so we're going to end. This will be really fun.
Come here. It's okay. Come look. Mommy's got on this little show, and I've got Miss Caroline. She wants to see you. Come here. It's okay. Are you sad now?
Aww.
You want me to come in there? Okay, I'll go. Come here. You want to show me your dress? Okay, I'll be there just a minute.
I did the same thing.
Look, she's on here. Do you want to say?
Hi, Dylan.
She's going to make Sunny.
You've got to come play with Sunny.
She's sleeping.
Daddy's already sleeping.
But yeah, so the mom, you don't have a place for that. You just got to do what you got to do, and they'll know it. She knows I love her. I know when we are home and together, like, we're best buds. I had a lot of mom guilt, I think, when I first put her in school, because she went to school 18 months, and I was just, oh, heartbreaking, you know, dropping. You're like walking away. There's so many days I just cried.
I'm sure.
Yes. So you just have to get in a place with peace about it, and then your time together, and then you just see, when you go to pick them up and you see them thriving and playing and so happy, and then they like see you and they just kind of wave, and that's what it takes. It takes you seeing that, like, oh, they are so happy and they are having a great time and they're here with a bunch of friends. But then that makes it softer and easier. But the mom guilt's real. I think even moms, even when you stay at home, mom, I'm sure there's some type of guilt you feel, right?
I mean, yeah, I think for sure. I definitely think that you can't escape it, you know? And no. Then, like, now Sunny's getting, she's turning two, and we're getting to the point where we need to, like, start really disciplining and learning how to share. And, you know, like, that's whole, it's hard to, like, navigate all these big feelings. And, oh, my God, it's the best. But it's also like, oh, my God, how do you do this?
And that's the thing. I told Ricky, and we talk all the time about it, because we get frustrated with each other, because course, that's, you both care so much about this tiny individual, and she will just, not on purpose, but it just wrecks both of you, and you're like, well, you should do it this way, and you're like, well, this is how I handle it, and I'm like, that's why she's doing this. So, like, you really have to get onto this level of just realizing that we're both doing the best we can, and there's got to be boundaries. I think talking about that and what your set expectations, because we both don't have the tools in our toolkit to be these parents that maybe you listen to on these podcasts about, this is how you should handle this. And so, of course,
me either.
So you get all these things in your head of how it should be, right? And you're like, okay, this is how we're supposed to talk to our child and do this. And this is respectful parenting. And so we shouldn't do that. But then when that goes haywire, you're like, okay, so now what do? Can we rewind back to the podcast? What's the next step? And they don't tell you. So you just have to realize that, hey, we're doing the best we can. We are aware parents. We do have a lot of information. And I think the fact that I tell parents when we talk about this, especially if they have younger kids, any mom, I'm like, if you're already asking the questions and if you're concerned that you're doing it right, you're doing it right. Because that's what it takes.
Yes. I know. It's a lot. I know. Because, like, Sunny right now, she doesn't want to share. And sometimes she thinks hitting is funny a little bit, but she doesn't know. And I'm like, oh, my God. No.
Yeah. Okay, I think just let yourself, for us, we went through that, and we still go through that at 4. Ben, I'm no expert parent, but I think also it helps when you hang out with moms that are kind of like-minded. And I really enjoyed the conversations with those moms when we would hang out, and I would say, hey, you know, I think we're having a hard time with this. And a lot of moms, you'll find, like, it's okay. They're going to figure it out. Like, when it gets there, like, those are the moms that I feel like all moms are like that. There's someone in my circle. We're kind of like, we just let them figure it out. You know, of course you don't let them get to, like, a place of whatever, but it just kind of, it makes you relax and know that this mother isn't going to get mad at your little girl who doesn't know how to share it. Like, we just, every child does this. There's not one child that doesn't.
Right. Right.
And so I think if you both have that understanding and that, hey, kids will work through this. Of course, we're not going to let them, like, slam each other to the ground, but we're still going to go over and not have shame to it and just work through it. And then sometimes you're going to be like, okay, hey, stop. I just think it's okay to give yourself grace if in that moment you have to be like, okay, this is what we're going to do. We're not going to be perfect every time, but we're going to try.
I love that. Okay. I always wrap up with leave your light. And Haley, I just love this. I love just real talk. Haley's like, I texted you today. I was like, do you want to go on this podcast tonight at like 8 o'clock, 8:30? Like, it's so random last minute, but I operate so much better on the fly. Cause, like, planning too far ahead, then, like, you, like, it's like stressful. And Haley's like, sure. I'm like, yes, this is so meant to be. It's meant to be today. Yeah. So I always like to end with leave your light. And basically, like, what do you want people to know?
Oh man, right now, we're going to be okay. I think there's a lot going on, and I think what people need to know right now in this current climate with what's going on that I think both parties are coming from a lot of fear, and that's normal. We're humans. We're going to have fear on both sides. I'm not even going to say what we're talking about because we're going to know what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. And I think we just have to see people with grace, and you got as much as, and for me, I get in a place, I've been there, that I'm like, I don't understand why, and this kind of makes me frustrated, but I just keep thinking, like, I just have to give grace because they're human, and for whatever reason, this means so much to them, and that's important to them, and it's probably because of fear, mm-hmm. and just on the other side of that with us is fear. We want them to do this because we have a fear that this won't get here.
It's all based on
fear. And all I know, it's all fear. And what I know about fear is that's wrong. And nothing will ever good happen at fear. So just try to give grace as much as you can. Do your part and just give grace to that person. Because I think we're getting into these places of just battling. And that will get us nowhere. And name calling and this person and that. As much as that seems like the right thing to do and the easy thing to do, it's going to lead you nowhere. It's not going to, and I like to just think when I get really mad, I like to think of these people in a traumatic situation. And
the ER nurse right here, this is good.
Right here. If they were in a traumatic situation, I wouldn't care what they believed. I would be helping them.
And you have,
and I really
actually
believe that about it. Yes. And I feel that there's just the good in people is there. And it takes us getting to that traumatic event for us to be like, put all of our thoughts aside. As Americans, we are like the most badass people. Are you kidding me? Mm-hmm. So we have come together on bigger terms. And let's just put that in the back of our mind. That's all I can say. It's just right now, that's a great question. I'm glad you asked because it has been on my heart. And I have, social media has been so hard to be on because it's just so dividing. It's so hard.
There's no right answer because everyone has such a strong opinion about everything. And it's like, and like you said, first good reasons to that person, you know,
right.
No matter how wrong it is to another person, like it's such a world of opposites right now. And it is.
And that's not how we work. We just went through being separated from each other, forced separation. It's like, let's not go and do this just over this. Like, I get it, and it's hard, and we're frustrated, and we're tired, and we're exhausted. If anyone's exhausted, I just worked a shift today. Believe me, I am so tired.
And now you're doing my podcast, Haley. You're amazing.
We're so tired. Like, we're tired, but, you know, there's so many people that I saw today, and it's just to reassure them that it's okay. We're going to be okay. Like, but, you know, we got these things in place that we love you to do, and but again, you know, I understand. I will respect your fear, and I hope that you can realize that it's fear, and just try to be humble and try to help another person feel good. I don't know.
I love that. And just give grace because it's all about fear. Everyone's operating in fear right now. We need to try to get us nowhere.
That's one thing my dad always taught me. He was like, if you're ever making a big decision, and the decision feels so hard to make with what you want, that's the wrong way to go. It should be like leading a horse to water. It should be easy.
What's your favorite thing about your dad?
My favorite thing, gosh, there's so many. He was just so solid. He was so solid. I can remember as a little girl, you know, when you fall or like you're nervous about something and you get so worked up. I just remember my dad being able to like come over to me and just look me in the eyes. And there was never a situation that he was ever out of sorts. He was just like,
even when you did something terrible on accident, did he?
Oh, I mean, yeah, my dad was like, he was the disciplinarian too, but it was more of those, and it wasn't needed. Me and my brother were 16 months apart. We fought like cats and dogs. Like we had nowhere to go. We were just on 40 acres of land and nothing to do but terrorize each other. So like my parents were much more not so into like the respectful parenting maybe, and just like,
maybe you get a respect.
Y'all keep
on. Yeah. Get a little ass whooping.
Yes, exactly. So, but yeah, it was his ability to calm me down at any time. He always had the best advice, and he always just was able to be that calm, that steady in that calm. And that was something that even now with Dylan, I can remember that when she gets worked up and I just try to come to her like my dad did and talk to her, not try to like divert, he didn't distract. He just talked me through it and was like, it was that steady. It was that calm. It was that I don't have fear in this situation. I know you think I'm supposed to have fear here, but I don't. Look at me. I'm okay. I can handle this. That's what I loved about him. So thanks for letting me talk so much about my dad.
Well, it's good to give him a tribute. You know, it's nice to document it and reminisce. And I just, Haley, I just have always loved your energy and you as a person. I think you're such an inspiring human. I think you handle so many big situations so well. And you just have that steadiness to you. Like every time I'm around you, I'm like, you're just calm and steady. And I know you have all sorts of emotional things you deal with, but like, you're just like steady, and it's a really beautiful trait that you have.
Thank you. That's the biggest compliment I can get. So I love it. And I love what you do and being a mom and doing this podcast and married to a musician. I feel the same about you, that lively enthusiasm. It's so needed and it's so wonderful. And I don't know one person that we talked about. You're like, oh my God, we're so great. She's so great. You know, so it's good to get those compliments and also receive that. So thank you.
Well, and I'll wrap up, but I think you might know Kaylee Dickerson. She's married to Russell Dickerson. She's super awesome and sweet and inspiring. And sometimes I like how we're talking about like social media and all sorts of stuff. Like it's hard out there and it's like overwhelming, but she said, and this is how I feel about you and why I'm so glad to have you on this podcast. My podcast is, I was like, sometimes I just like, I want to throw in the towel and like, it all feels so dark and like overwhelming. And she's like, yes, but like you have to put light out there, you know, and like whatever you can, wherever you can give light, when you are someone who is reaching for the light, you've got to share that. And so I feel like you do that. And sometimes when I get burnt out about like having to like put myself out there on social media and all that, cause it's exhausting out there. And like, it's sometimes I just want to check out and not be a part of the social media world at all, cause the comparison and all of that. But to know that like where you can shine light and give light, where you feel called to do, we got to do that to combat the darkness. And that is encouraging to me. And you do that.
Yeah, same. I feel the same about you. You're exactly right. You have that. That's the biggest thing you can take away. It's like, yeah, my job isn't at all glorified or wonderful. But there's so many times that when I go in, especially in the ER, I can just remember praying. I mean, like, please just let me be a positive to someone today. I'm going to be that person that they need to hear from today. This is what I was given. This was the instrument I was given, and I want to use it to the best of my ability. Every time have I done that? No, I failed a lot, but you're right. If you realize that there is that light and there's a reason in your corner, whatever that is, whatever you think is so simple, like you telling the podcast, like me, what do you want to talk to me about? I'm just me. Like, it's just like, I don't feel like a special person at all,
you're
but you're
so
right.
Special.
It's that. Yeah, and that's everybody from, you know, the
that's
person.
Everybody.
That's
everybody.
Yes, man, that I can remember before COVID and like before school, when school was in, there was this traffic light lady that I would go by, and I loved going by her every single day because she was so happy with like stopping buses and stopping cars. But she would be so great with those kids, be giving her a high five, and I was just like, you're amazing.
She was enjoying day. She was enjoying her day and enjoying her gift. And enjoying her role, her gift to make people smile. And that's the thing, like, you can be holding a stop sign in the middle of the street, but like, you can have the best job in the world in your mind because you're finding joy in it and you're bringing joy to people that you see in the cars and you're bringing joy to children that you walk across the street. It's all about your perspective and how you enter your day in those circumstances.
Right. It's not about the best, most fanciest, that can help in monetary ways, but like, she probably blessed a kid. No telling how many kids get blessed by her every day. And, you know, that to me is a superhero. That is the celebrity of the show. You know, that's the big person. So, yeah, it's hard and it's dark, but you just got to keep, because as many of those people are about out there to knock you down and say something bad, there's one person that you probably affected today. If you go out with the mentality of like, I've got something to give. And
I love that. I've got something to give.
Yes.
If we could just start our day with that instead of starting our day with, oh, here it is again. I'm so pissed. I'm so annoyed. I've got to do this. This person, I hate this person for this reason. I feel bad. I got heartburn and oh my God, my head hurts. And now like it's early. I didn't get enough sleep and all that. And I got to see my coworker. God, I hate seeing this person. And I'm in traffic. Like, you can go that route or you can go, I've got something to give today. And like, yes, my feet hurt, but you know what? I'm breathing. And like, here's my gift and here's where I can use it. I'm going to look for an opportunity to give some love. That's amazing. Mm-hmm. That's a great.
Absolutely. It's not going to be, you're going to get 100% every single day of your life. But if you have the intention, you're going to get it. Even if we get that 10% of that effect, that's better than nothing. So,
hey, you're amazing. I love you, Tan. Thank you so much for joining me on this podcast.
I love you too. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for doing this after your day of working. Oh my God, rock star. Okay, go to sleep.
I will. Take care, Caroline.
Okay, bye, Haley.